Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name's Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
What's happening?
Today we're bringing you this podcast from a beautiful, sunny Southern California, bringing you a little daily dose of positivity.
Pretty standard.
Pretty standard.
You got kind of an NPR voice going on right now. What's with that?
You know what? I thought I'd switch it up today and bring my NPR voice to the table.
You need to cut that out.
Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to read a 5-star review from one of our listeners titled Informative and Fun by Cheryl Goley. I'm so excited that I found Amanda and this podcast. I've been following Amanda for less than a year, and the content on her page and in this podcast is amazing. This has quickly become one of my favorite podcasts. I'll listen to it while I'm driving, and I will 100% sit in my car and finish the podcast before walking in to wherever I am. Each one has been so informative, and I've learned so much new stuff. They do a great job of explaining terms and phrases that may not be in everyone's vernacular, and you can tell by listening to them that they really enjoy the content and their guests as well. Thank you so much, Cheryl, for leaving us that 5-star review. If you guys could go ahead and take a moment to leave us a review, it would mean so much to Chris and I.
Absolutely. So getting into today's episode, we have Aaron Alexander on, and he's a pioneering manual therapist and movement coach. And he's got 16 years of professional experience, whose clients range from A-list Hollywood celebrities to professional athletes and everybody in between. He's got his own podcast called Align Podcast, and he just came out with a book called The Align Method. So I first met Aaron on the back gym and on the turf in Gold's Gym, and he was out there doing some crazy moves, like with substantial amount of weight, you know. So like, not only was showing strength, but this crazy flexibility and range of motion. And I was like, I don't know, I just was kind of drawn to it. So I was like, hey, you know, what the hell are you doing over here?
Yeah, for how muscular he is, he's very mobile.
Absolutely. It's a freak of nature kind of thing. And so I just approached him, and we started training together. And, you know, sometimes we'll, you know, he comes to the Saturday workout with us at the beach and kind of shows us some mobility stuff and pretty much exposes us all for our lack of mobility. But he's great. His message is positive. And I think one of the best parts about his approach in this book, which is called The Align Method, is that even though he talks about 5 movement principles in here, it's such a multifaceted approach that you can't really limit it to those 5. I mean, it's a great tagline for the book, and he definitely covers it properly, but it's really kind of a universal lifestyle. It's not just, you know, checking off these things on a list, right?
Right. He really goes into how his alignment method is, you know, not just being aligned in your body, but also being aligned in your life. So really a metaphor for life. Mm-hmm. But then also within that, he gives a lot of practical posture tips, things you can add to your day, even, you know, simple breathing techniques that can really help reduce the stress throughout your day and help you live a more aligned life.
Yeah, seriously. I think it's he has a combination of like a mental and spiritual approach kind of woven into the physicality of it and like the physical benefits of it. So I really like it. It's completely different than most of the approaches you hear from somebody who looks like him, because he looks kind of like a bodybuilder style.
Right.
But he's kind of a hippie at heart.
Definitely. And it was a good reminder to me that, you know, just because I hit yoga class once a week, that that's not enough for paying attention to my posture. Mm-hmm. To really do that on an ongoing basis, when you're sitting in traffic, it's also a good time to pay attention to those types of positions.
Yeah.
You could be like Chris and set up a daily reminder on your phone like Chris does.
Yeah, that was one of the messages within the podcast that you'll hear, is that we talk about mindfulness and actually just, instead of just going through the motions of our day, actually being present, thinking about what we're doing, thinking about where our body is positioned, how it's aligned, whether it's misaligned, all these kind of things. It's just another way of another approach to mindfulness practice. You know, we always talk about that in this podcast, about being in the present and how that's going to kind of be the best for emotional, mental health, and obviously, and then that translates into physical health.
Right. Without further ado, let's get into the episode.
Yeah, let's get after it.
And I'd like to welcome to the podcast, Aaron.
Thanks so much for making time for this. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for coming. Yeah.
This is our first podcast recording sitting on the floor.
Oh, man.
Which Aaron's going to explain today what the benefits of that are. Mm. But before we get into that, I wanted to give listeners, you know, a little background story. Were you always so fluid? How'd you end up in the movement space? And you seem so comfortable in your own body. Were you always that way?
I think it's interesting that that reflection goes out, because I still deal with all sorts of different realms of like self-doubt and insecurity and things of that nature. And I think a lot of the kind of the patterns that people wear on their sleeve, oftentimes you can read into that and see where compensations exist. You know, and so if a person's really fit, that could be, perhaps in my case, it was coming from a place of like just feeling deep insecurity growing up. Mm-hmm. And so I got really obsessed with bodybuilding, and the kind of like the story that I have in the book there is my dad got into drugs and mm-hmm. crack cocaine in particular, and like my home life as a teenager got kind of a little bit like unsettling, unsafe feeling. And so my story around that, which, you know, I'm not completely attached to that either, maybe there's other events that led to that, but the story that makes sense to me is that I packed on biological stability as a means to kind of like brace myself in like environmental chaos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you can see a person be like, wow, you're so fit, man. Like, wow, great. It's like, well, maybe at some point in my life, maybe even presently, I feel completely out of control, you know, and this is my expression to kind of like feel like I have an anchor. Same thing sometimes with people being really smart. Same thing with some people being maybe like OCD, you know, really obsessive, like, okay, I have this linearity and everything's stacked up in order and order and order. Oftentimes underlying that is a sensation of feeling actually out of control. Mm-hmm. So like for people listening, because I bet you there's people that are like really into bodybuilding mm-hmm. that are coming to it from a really healthy place.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think with anything, it's not why or what you do, in my experience or mm-hmm. opinion. I think it's always like, why am I doing this in the first place? Mm. So if you're going into something like bodybuilding or gymnastics or dance or reading books to be really smart or anything, if you're going into that as a place to prove to others, as opposed to actually just really loving the craft of cultivating your body and sculpting yourself and like, wow, it's like, I'm almost like in a painting.
Right.
You know, I don't want to like
feel good about it. And
yeah, like, yeah, this is fun, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really give a shit about what you think about. Like, I'm just enjoying my human experience. Mm-hmm. And I happen to be inclined towards bodybuilding. I think that's great. That had nothing to do with where I was at.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I was entirely based off of, you know, if someone would take a picture, which like when I was, you know, 16, there was like much less pictures than now. I would have had a terrible time now. You know, but if someone would get a camera out or whatever and take a picture, I would have to, you know, literally go off into hiding, do a bunch of push-ups and pull-ups and grab anything, do isometric curls to try to bring more of a pump to my muscles. Totally. so that when I'm imprinted on that image mm-hmm. for eternity, people could see like, wow, his veins are popping. And he's like, wow, he's fit. Mm-hmm. You know, meanwhile, underneath all that fitness was like a, you know, I think just an insecure boy.
Yep. So what were some other signs that it was an unhealthy habit for you? Because, yeah, I think that's important to make that distinction and see where that comes up for you.
Yeah. Well, I think just continually seeking outward validation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a primary thing where I was just really obsessed. And you could say I still have symptoms of that. I mean, as a person that's, you know, I'd say even the fact that I got to the point of creating this book and, you know, I'm active on social media and active on creating this like movement around getting people into their bodies and all these things that I think on the face of it are really positive. And the impact from what I've gathered from what people have, you know, sent me back is like, wow, this has really changed my life. And this is, you know, but I think to even have the impetus in the first place to want to create that for me, I think in at least some part came from a place of discontentment.
Right. Mm.
You know, and so I'm noticing as this like material world is starting to shift a little bit around me through me taking these steps, I'm noticing all of a sudden I'm starting to realize that that mountain that I thought was the top is not the top. Mm-hmm. And two, I'm starting to actually begin to feel more secure in myself.
Yeah.
And more like at home in my body.
That's awesome.
And in relationship, which now I'm starting to witness relationships starting to deepen.
Yep.
Because I'm starting to open up and be like, you know what? Like, I don't really have anything to prove to you, but like, I'd love to hang out. Yeah.
I think that's great. So you weren't always this fluid, you know, you've worked on it. You were more about lifting weights and now you really brought the fluidity to the movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it seems like it's more of, it's just as much of a mentality as it is a physical practice as well.
I don't think there's any separation.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what the aligned method. If it's, again, the first chapter of the intro, I like immediately shit on method because I'm more like the perspective like Bruce Lee, where it's really hard to contain any methodology around.
Right. Like be life. Like water.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, so that's a philosophy, which is what I attempted to instill in the book, is more of like planting a seed to change a person's perspective on how they perceive their movement and their fitness, mm-hmm. like the meaning of it. You know, but a huge part of that is that all of your movement has meaning, you know? So we think like, okay, I'm going to go to a dance class. You know, so I go to a dance class every Sunday over at Dance Line in Culver City. I go do dance hall or, you know, whatever, West African dance. And we're like, oh, we're doing dance. Like I literally do that.
I'm down.
Yeah, let's go. You should go.
I'm serious. You know? I am down.
And so during that time, it's very clear that, okay, my movement of my hips has meaning. And my knees and my spine. Okay, this is what it's like. Literally, there's like a word translation for this movement in African or whatever. You're like, okay, this movement has meaning. Well, what about the meaning of my movement while I walked into the dance studio? Did that movement have meaning? Mm-hmm. The answer from a perspective of like the way that people perceive you and the way that you perceive yourself is totally, you know, so what about the, was there meaning in my movement while I was in my car? Was there meaning in my movement while I was getting out of bed, while I was making vegetables, while I was having this conversation with you, mm-hmm. you know? And so there's I'll wrap this up really quick. There's a guy that I mentioned in the book called Albert Mehrabian, who he's a UCLA professor that in the 70s, he came up with a thing called the 55-38-7 principle. And what that is 55% of our communication with each other comes from body language, and then 38% comes from the tone of our voice, and then 7 is the actual words that we're speaking. So culturally, I think Western culture, it's different depending upon the culture, puts a lot of emphasis on the actual jargon and the words that are coming out of our face. Mm-hmm. At least we think we do. But in reality, with 93% of certainty, if there's incongruence between the tone of my voice, the pacing of my language, and the way that my body expresses and moves as I say it, if there's incongruence with my words and that, you just are listening to my tone and my body language. So we think that we're communicating with our words, but we're really just tricking ourselves. We're always dancing to each other, and we're always dancing to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So when you get up in the morning and you're brushing your teeth or whatever, that moment with you, when you look in the mirror, you're literally perceiving where you're at. So is your head hunched forward? Are you staring down at your phone? Are you rushing through that experience? Or are you staying back? You take a breath? Are you able to like actually look at yourself in the eyes and be like, all right, here we are. Mm-hmm. Where do we go from here?
Yeah. So are you, in the beginning of the book, I know you talk a lot about posture. So are you kind of using posture and movement interchangeably? Or, you know, would you say maybe start with focusing on your posture, and then obviously that like leads to how you're moving?
So
I mean, we do sit a lot in this society. So.
Yeah. So it's so posture is just your position.
Okay.
You know, so you're going beyond the concept of posture being like the thing I learned in Catholic school where it's like it feels like there's a stick in my ass. I'm like, okay, like doing posture. Like, please don't hit me with a stick. You're like, cool. That's a posture.
Okay.
You know, that has a meaning. But then there's the posture as you are sitting down and having food with your friends. And there's the posture as you're going into a meeting or you're having a conversation or anything. You know, and so if we start to just bring a little bit of almost like auditing the mechanics of our day, mm-hmm. for the most part, if you were looking at it from let's say instead of that time you pay a personal trainer $150 to like coach you through a deadlift and squat or whatever, and they're watching your mechanics of your hips and the spine and your neck carriage and all this different stuff. What if we extended that out, you know, an hour before the workout and an hour after the workout?
Right.
Doesn't need to be the whole day yet. Right. But let's just pay attention to before and after.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Like, the trainer's still kind of with me. I'm prepping. I'm greasing the grooves, as Pavel Tsatsilin would say, to like go into this training session. You know, like, where am I at? Mm-hmm. Like, when I'm in my car, what's the carriage of my spine and my hips? Mm-hmm. You know, while I'm walking, am I staring down at my phone, kind of disorienting myself and kind of exacerbating those patterns that have meaning? Mm-hmm. Or is it possible that I can start to almost have like my personal trainer with me saying like, oh, that's good. You could load, that's a load bearing spine that you are working on your computer with right now. Mm-hmm. That's great. And if we can do that, then okay, what if we did it 2 hours before and 2 hours after? Mm-hmm. What if we did our whole freaking day? You know, and not in a like obsessive compulsive crazy person way, because then you're outside of yourself as well. So we can start to instill these practices. The reason we have a coach is they instill these practices into us that when we're in the game, we don't actually need to think about it because I've driven those practices. I've greased my grooves. Mm-hmm. And so if we start to bring those awarenesses, you know, that we break down in the book of some just like basic fundamental mechanics into who we are as people, the time that you all of a sudden you slip on a puddle, you know, or you want to play some sport, or your kids jump up and they tackle you from behind, or a dog runs into the side of your leg. You're like, oh, dude, my mechanics are like so rock solid because I've been bringing attention into my movement for the last 6 months.
Right.
As opposed to I pay attention to fitness 4 times a week. And even in my drive to get to that fitness, I'm kind of wrecking my postural carriage.
Yep.
You know, what if we just extend the conversation essentially?
So how does riding your motorcycle to the gym fit with that philosophy?
It fits great. It fits great.
Really? Punch forward and things like that the whole time?
No. Or? Well, this is a little bit of like a tangential conversation a little bit, but it's the same thing. I have a theory of sorts of short-term safety oftentimes will lead to long-term danger. You know, so if you are in the car all the time, it's just a metaphor. It's just, think of the car more as a metaphor for anything. Being too safe in a relationship, being too safe and not wanting to maybe speak your mind to somebody because you don't want to hurt their feelings. So I'm going to play it safe. You know, so if I play it safe in that moment, it's like, okay, ooh, we made it through that conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, but you better bet in the next 6 months, year, whatever, like something is festering.
It's going to backfire.
It's going to backfire.
Yeah.
You know, and so with the car thing, it's like, okay, cool. I'm just going to hunker myself up in this thing. I don't think everybody needs to get a motorcycle. I think it'd be a terrible idea, actually. but I'm going to hunker myself up inside this safe cage, you know, and now I'm going to get a Tesla. So the car literally just drives itself. So I can just completely disengage and pour my consciousness into my cell phone for the whole car ride. And the car just does it. Mm-hmm. That you are starting to take away some of those adaptive qualities that you would get had you actually driven the car. You'll get even more adaptive qualities if you're on, say, in this metaphor, on a motorcycle, and you're looking around, and you're not playing music or anything, and you're really focused. You're watching people's eyes. You're seeing. You don't even care about signals in the road. Like, you're watching eyes.
Yeah, you're actually in the scene and not viewing it through a screen, like
That's
through
correct.
The window, the windshield.
Yeah.
Know?
So that person.
We talked about this at the gym with the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Yep.
You know,
that's what the Align Method is. Essentially, Zen and the Art of like dishwashing. Seriously.
No, but I think that's such a good reminder to pay attention to posture no matter what position you're in. And yeah, don't be afraid to take some of those risks in life. It doesn't have to be a motorcycle. It could just be a tough conversation.
Yeah.
Right. And not just about posture. I mean, even though it's one of the focuses of posture, your whole the method is taking everything into consideration.
Like, that's correct.
The whole idea that there's the illusion of separation, you know, that everything is connected.
Yeah.
This is blowing my mind right here.
Oh, good.
No, but I talked with Aaron this morning of like, you know, I pay attention to my posture in yoga class, like back to like in yoga class, I'm like, I'm opening up, I'm good. But like, what about the rest of the day? You know what I mean? That would be so much more valuable than one yoga class a week.
Yeah. And then also realizing that you are always, you know, so like your children, back to like the Albert Mehrabian 55, you know, 37 stuff, they don't really care what you say, I think. You know, they care, you know, what's the organization of your home? What's this? Do they feel like a sensation of safety and love? Do they feel like they can express anything to you and you won't judge them? And you come into that place. It's not even that I said anything. It's that like, whatever you are coming to me with, if it's a place of authenticity, I'm open arms. You know, you don't need to know anything about books or literature or Abraham Lincoln or some philosophy quote thing. Like, if you have that type of father figure or mother figure or friend, it's like it really doesn't matter what they say. They just will just sometimes they'll just give me a hug. We won't say anything, and I just feel so safe.
Right.
You know, and so that's a postural movement expression that you're creating for this person to create safety. I think that in conversations, you know, or say business, you know, that's people care about financial success for good reason and career and all that stuff. When you're going into a meeting with somebody, you know, a new potential client or maybe a date, what they are looking at is they're looking at your history brought to this present moment of like, okay, cool. Here's Chris, here's Amanda, but you're not just showing up now I'm seeing how's your sleep last night. I'm seeing how's your nutrition. I'm seeing how's your postural tendencies that you've cultivated since you were put in a stroller, you know, since you were a 3-year-old. You know, like that's, we're just a bunch of chapter books, you know, and you open up a page and you're like, oh, cool. Like nobody can see the other 400 pages. Like, oh, no, no, no. We're always reading each other's books. Mm-hmm. You know, some people put language to it, which, you know, that's fine. But regardless of whether you have any language to describe it or not, that's what we're always doing. So if you can be a little bit more attentive to how you exist when nobody's watching, then when somebody finally is there, they're like, oh, okay. You're like the real thing.
That's nice. So
that's a great point. I love that.
So speaking of, you know, practices of when nobody's watching, let me just ask, since we just did a podcast on morning routines, how do you start your day? How do you set up your practice for, you know, living this lifestyle for when nobody's watching?
I think my morning routine could be so much better. Hence why I wrote a chapter in the book about it. You don't write a book about something that you do masterfully. I think you write about a book as something you like aspire to be. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're writing a book that's like, oh, I've just crushed everything in here. Like every chapter in the book to me is like aspirational.
Nice.
You know, well, like, I also think you're always sharing like what the best goal is. And if you incorporate some elements of what you're teaching every day, then you've done it, right?
Yeah. Some people write their affirmations in a journal. Some people publish a book. You know?
Yeah. I mean, either or. Seriously. Whatever gets your thoughts out of your head.
No, absolutely.
You know, but so in relation to that, my morning, I am aware. So like yesterday I had this thing where I needed to wake up early. I had this like coaching thing that I was doing that I needed to be there at like 7 a.m. So I had to be up at 6. So before the sun came up, it was like the best morning ever. Mm-hmm. You know, and I like meditated because there's no sun out. And I'm like essentially like doing the aligned method board. I love doing it. But then many other mornings, it really doesn't look like that. You know, and I don't get to bed till like 11:30. And, you know, I get up at like 7:45 or something like that, which is fine. But the first thing that I do is to kind of salvage my not so aligned morning is I go expose my body to the sun immediately. You know, so the sooner that you can get your body exposed to sun, the sooner that you can start to reset your circadian rhythm to start releasing all of the hormones, the cortisols and all that stuff. And also the neurochemistry that when you are getting that sun penetrating through your eyes, when you go out for a morning walk, don't put sunglasses on.
Right. Sunglasses are one of the worst things because you're not setting your neurotransmitters up, right?
Yeah, sunglasses are, who's it, Corey Hart? I wear my sunglasses at night so I can. That's legit.
She doesn't know that song.
That's a legit song. Like the only time to wear sunglasses, in my opinion, and it obviously depends on your ethnicity and such. If you're like blonde hair, blue eyed, you know, no eyebrows, that might be a little bit different than someone that's like, you know, the opposite of that. So all of this, there's no one set rule for almost anything. You know, like nutrition and movement and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it's the same thing with sun exposure. Where are you on the earth? Are you in Ecuador? Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to be different than if you're in Alaska.
Totally.
You know, so it's really hard to have a conversation here in LA and be like, this is the rule. It's like, well, this is a rule that will relate to many people, but like Seriously. You have to look into what your circumstance is. Mm-hmm. But getting that sun penetrating your eyes literally sets your neurochemistry to feel well. You know, so you release serotonin and dopamine. It kind of sets your body clock and your hormones into a place of wellness.
Isn't it supposed to be like before 8:30 or something like that too? It's got to be pretty early for you to optimize it at least.
So all day throughout. So I'm not the expert on this. I have, I talk on my podcast with people that are, and I gather information from them essentially. And in the book, I kind of glance on this, but again, I'm not like, it's a little bit out of my depth with it. Mm-hmm. But the spectrum of light that you're gathering as the sun goes across the horizon changes dependent upon where it's at.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a similar thing of like, okay, cool. First thing early in the morning, that's like really good. It's really healthy. That's like kale, it's steamed kale. It's like, that's great. But if all you do is eat steamed kale, that becomes a bummer. Mm-hmm. You know, so you want steamed kale, and then it turns into strawberries, and then it turns into, you know, whatever healthy food throughout the day. Mm-hmm. But all of the sun's spectrum is of value, and it's different. It's like a different nutritional panel as it goes across the sky. So you want to get out intermittently. There's no way. It's like, and I have this analogy in the book, like we like, because we're, you know, compartmentalized individuals quite oftentimes, we like things clean and neat and easy. We're like, okay, cool. I read in Men's Health that I get 35 minutes of sun each day. So I went out and I did it. I absorbed sun for 35 minutes, which is actually like less than that, which I recommend more than that. You know, it's like, no, like, seriously, go out for a 5-minute walk at 9 o'clock.
It also depends
and
on
the 10 o'clock.
The pigment of your skin o'clock. Too. Then because the darker you are, the more sun you need, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So because it's harder for you to convert to vitamin D, that, you know, the darker your pigment of skin.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's not a, like we always say, there's not a one size fits all.
Right.
And yeah, so just the prescription of, oh, go get your 20 minutes a day. Well, it depends on,
yeah, it doesn't make any sense,
where you are at, in relation to the equator, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Your skin pigment.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with fitness in general, like the same idea of, you want to get titrates, just like a chemistry term of like drops of that sun throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way you wouldn't want to, this is the analogy I use in the book, like you wouldn't want to go down to Gold's Gym once a week or three times a week and do like this massive hydration session. You know, you go out with your buddies and you get the phones out for Instagram. We're just like chugging massive gallons of water and just like, wow, we're getting it all in. You're like, that would be insane. And I don't drink any water the rest of the day. We're like, what are you doing? You know, it's like the same concept with fitness in general, except with fitness, you're circulating the water inside of your body. Mm-hmm. And so what your body needs, just think of, you are a pond essentially,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you want to be able to continually circulate the fluid inside of that pond. So you have healthy organisms within the ecosystem, compared to the way that most of us treat our fitness or our pond circulation is we blast that pond with the pump for 45 minutes,
right.
Do some HIIT workout or whatever. And then the rest of the day, it's just like, cool, cut the pump off and we're done. You know, so the body thrives, and there's all sorts of research from like NASA and various different places. The body thrives on consistency.
Mm-hmm.
The mind thrives on consistency. Relationships thrive on consistency. Mm-hmm. How you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah, there's a podcast that I listened to, and somebody made the point that if you work out an hour a day and then go sit at your desk, you're only 4% more active than the most lazy person.
Yeah, right.
And so it's an interesting perspective, you know, because I mean, yeah, you are getting some movement. It is better, but you know, you're not really optimizing in that situation with that approach.
Yeah,
so that's why it would be important to take, obviously, work breaks, not in like movement breaks, and go out in the sun multiple times a day, not that's just right. in the morning. It's not one and done.
Not one and done.
Not one and done.
Yeah. So the NASA. Did you have more on that?
No, that's it.
So the NASA researcher, Joan Vernikos, for like 40 years, she was the director of health sciences. It was her label, I'm pretty sure, health or life sciences. Anyway, so she worked with the health of astronauts when they would go into zero gravity, then they go to outer space. And what she found was that the astronauts that would do essentially exactly what I'm describing, these like bulk HIIT workout sessions in space, you know, for, you know, a couple hours a day or in the morning or whatever, and then just kind of go off into their zero gravity experience for this day and get the work done and all things, they would go through this rapid aging process, essentially, where their bones become more brittle and muscle turns to fat and cognitive function declines. And they essentially turn into like old men and women. They zaps them forward 10 years and they come back, compared to the people that would do exactly what we're describing now of doing consistent titrates of fitness throughout the day. Those people age much slower in that zero gravity experience because your body continually has that hermetic adaptive stress to respond to throughout the day. You see it. It's consistent even in space.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that. I mean, personally, even though I don't always follow the mobility method, where I'm always staying mobile and stretching out and making sure my hips are open and my joints are taking the full range of motion after my workouts. Sometimes I come home, go right in front of the computer and go right to work. And I'm more sore, I'm more stiff. I mean, I can feel it. I mean, I'm still young. I'm still, well, relatively young. I'm almost 40, but like,
are you really?
I'll be 38 this year. Yeah.
Damn. And so you look good.
So hey, I'm old though, man. Woo! Hey, don't let it fool you. Yeah,
that's good.
So
I didn't know.
Yeah, man, I'm old.
I wonder if people know listening. You're like,
well, now you do.
Now you do. Now you know.
Chris is 9 years older than me.
So I start to feel it. You know, I definitely feel it whenever I sit down the rest of the day, even though I'm highly active. I'm very intense in my workouts. And so I know even just planning for this podcast, I'm more mindful about what I'm doing and be like, oh, I need to get on the ground.
That's so cool.
Like yesterday, like I said, I just immediately got on the ground when I was thinking about prepping for this podcast. Yep. And it was just exposing me. I was like, I don't do this, and just showing just how awkward it is when I get outside of my normal movement patterns of your, essentially like bodybuilding. Even like, you know, I do some functional training too. It still doesn't mean that I'm open and mobile on the floor. So maybe we can talk about like what it is, at least we can start physically, why you like to spend so much time on the floor.
Yeah, what's up with the floor culture?
So I'm like a canary in the coal mine. Again, most things that I say that I'm, you know, projecting into the world, I could link back to some form of like instability, you know, and so I'm like scratching my own itch. So I've had circulation issues since I've been like a little guy. Like a teenager, I had like varicose veins in both my legs. I had varicose vein removal surgery probably about a year ago now or so. They're really bad. They look like the legs of like an 80-year-old man, but like, you know, an unhealthy 80-year-old man. And so I could feel fluid building up in my lower compartments in my legs. And so everybody has that experience, you know. So like blood clots annually in America, there's over 300,000 deaths from blood clots.
Wow.
Through like traveling and kind of sitting in blood, just pulling up and beginning to clot because you're not circulating. You know, so everyone's experiencing, you know, the way that you move lymphatic fluid through your body is through muscular contraction. You know, so if you are just sitting and you're pulling up blood all the way, like so far away from your heart, and your legs are just kind of dangling underneath your body all day long, you essentially become like a heavy bag of fluid. You know, so if you want to be, you know, light like a butterfly, sting like a bee, like to be able to maintain that, like that sensation, you guys know when you go to a gym and you know how good you feel when you feel like light, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh man, I could just like, I could do like push ups and I can jump and I can sprint and just, wah, I just feel like light.
Mm-hmm.
Compare that to the way that you feel after you're like sitting on a plane for 3 hours and your legs are just kind of, it's like, I feel just like bricks.
Totally.
You know, so cramped in too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so we're all experiencing that. I just happen to have experienced it in the more kind of like graphic, kind of just uncomfortable way.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's in part my, I'm scratching my own itch with that of like, okay, I'm, in order for my legs to heal and be well and be able to circulate fluid properly, I need to be more like our ancestors have been forever. And spend time on the ground because it's a natural, you can think of it as like a tuning mechanism for your whole body. You know, so when you are right now, we're all in different positions. So cool. You know, so Amanda's got, she's got one leg up and then the other knee's kind of coming out. And then Chris is kind of, he was in a squat. Now he's in a 90-90, I think. I can't exactly see. You know, and so we're literally like, so you're doing this medial rotation in your right femur and then external rotation in the left femur, and you're kind of starting to open up through the pelvic floor muscles and you're opening up through the quadratus lumborum and you're doing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As we're having this conversation, you're stacking your diaphragm, maybe you're breathing through your nose as you're doing that. So you're telling your autonomic nervous system that this is a safe place and I can be calm and I can think clearly, compared to being, if we were all in chairs or sofas, we would all literally be the exact same posture, expressing ourselves in this exact same kind of mold container and literally pulling up fluid in our lower legs. What we're doing now is we're literally like, we're rinsing all of that stuff out of our lower compartments, and we're bringing our legs closer to our heart, which makes it easier in our cardiovascular system to circulate itself. Mm. That's better for digestion, for starters, / everything. But when you're digesting food, you have a bolus of food in your, you know, stomach, intestines. You want blood to be able to break that stuff down and go through all those processes. If that blood is stuck all the way, you know, 4 feet away from where it could be right beside it, it just makes, it's a less efficient system. It's right. The same idea. If you were siphoning gas into a car or something, you'd be like, okay, cool. Like I want to get the tube up so that I can just pour that gas right in there, as opposed to like, oh man, we can siphon it. But like the tube's like, it's 10 feet down. Like, we need a lot of pressure to get that going.
Need some more suction.
Yeah. So our hydraulics will have to work much harder in order to get this system flowing. Mm-hmm. That's your body.
And so if you guys can watch me, I'm probably moving. I'm changing positions about every 3 minutes because I'm just not used to this. But it doesn't mean you got to sit, you know, get in the lotus position and sit there for an hour. Just move around. Just get on the floor. And like I said, I'm changing every 3 minutes and it'll probably get a little bit easier. But yeah, just get down there and do it. It's not that
And it needs to be comfortable. So I by no means am recommending anybody lead some like aesthetic lifestyle and your like knees are bloody on some tile floor. Like get a really cushy rug, get yoga mats, get like Moroccan poofs and maybe get a yoga block or something like that, and floor cushions. And
yeah, we're all sitting on pillows. It's not like you got to sit on the hardwood floor.
So yeah. Yeah. Set you down.
Set us down probably. He put Chris on three pillows.
I'm on three pillows. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so a rule with that to make this actually actionable and not just kind of like out there stuff. Mm-hmm. When you are sitting on a chair or the ground or anywhere, pay attention to location of your hips. Make sure that they're above the height of your knees. If they are, then that will set your pelvis up for stability and success. You know, so if you're just on the very front edge of those sit bones, called the ischial tuberosities, people can reach underneath and grab their butt cheeks and find those little bony things shooting at your butt. It's nice to do just in general. So you reach back there, find those guys, pull those straight back a little bit. And then what you'll find is you're essentially, from that position, you're able to bear weight easily through your shoulders. Mm-hmm. You know, so like today Chris and I were at the gym and some asshole, like, I don't know how that's possible. They loaded a bar up to 315 pounds and put it on the side of like a dip thing machine, that was like bending over. Poor man was like doing sit ups underneath it.
Seriously, this 315 could have slipped off this thing so easily and landed on his head, and he was just oblivious of what was going on. Yeah.
Craziness. But anyway, so as you did that, you heroically like squatted the 315 up and you're holding it. Then we were taking the plates off. And as you're doing that, you're essentially following those same mechanics that I'm describing now of that carriage of your pelvis. Mm-hmm. And so you can maintain that same carriage I'm describing that by just paying attention to the location of your hips, make sure they're just a little bit above your knees. And as you're sitting down, then you could load 315 pounds, depending upon your skeletal structure and strength and all that stuff, tensegrity of your body. And you can cleanly, safely, and actually even therapeutically support that weight compared to if you were completely crunched over and pelvis tucked under and you're like sad puppy dog position.
Yeah.
Then you're like asking for some form of explosion.
Yeah, I mean, because that'll force your shoulders forward. It's bad for your upper, you know, your upper body posture as well. So
yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting too how you have people turn their couch into a table, like put your laptop on your couch and then sit on some pillows on the floor, and like that's the way to do it.
Yeah, keep your couch. You do not need to be. I'm not by no means like I think it's so funny. Like the more people buy the book and you know whatever, the more I notice people's sphincters clench up as I walk into a room. And they're like, oh, gotta get the. I'm like, dude, no, like everything's fine.
Like, everybody feels guilty. You're sitting, for sitting in a chair.
It's totally cool. You drove here. Awesome. I love it. You know, like it's completely fine. That's funny. It's just be aware that your chair and your couch are tools. And for the most part, we've been using those tools without, absentmindedly, of just being formed into the shape of that couch. And if that's what you do, if you are just dust in the wind in modern culture, as you guys certainly know from like a fitness and nutritional perspective, then you will become a statistic. Mm-hmm. And a statistic in Western culture is not the place to be.
Totally. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know there's the study, speaking of statistics, is that there's an increased susceptibility, or what was it? It was your ability to get off the floor without your hands is a good indicator for longevity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I thought that was very interesting, you know, because obviously, I mean, it has something to do with muscularity and bone health and things like that. Like type 2 muscle fibers have a indication of health when you're a senior because they prevent falls, right? Yeah. When there's a, you know, they have the quick reaction of whether you're either going to tip over or your type 2 muscle fibers kick in and prevent you. So so there's that aspect, but I think that that's an interesting implication of that study.
Yeah, totally. And so that was done, or it was released in the European Journal of Cardiology, and it was it was people from age 51 to I think 79, wow. Something like that. And it was a 6-point span. I just did a podcast talking about this, is why I have these numbers directly in my mind.
Nice.
In case you're like wondering if this is creepy. And so it was the study was 6.3 years, and they tracked people through that time. And based off of the amount of contact points that each person needed to get up and down off of the ground, there was a strong correlation of all-cause mortality. If a person, so you start off with, so people want to do it at home. It's a thing I've seen on the internet and stuff. And it's in the book, obviously. But so you start off standing, and you start off with a score of 10. And then as you come down, you cross your legs and essentially go into like a cross-leg position, mm-hmm. sit all the way down on the ground, and then all the way back up. Every time you wobble as you're going through that, you deduce a half a point. Every time you need to use a hand to support on your knees or the floor or whatever, you deduce a whole point. And then you do the same thing on the way back up. People that had a score of 0 to 3, so they got 7 points slashed off, they were 6 times more likely to die in that 6.3-year span of the study. Wow. And so what that is, it's not saying that, okay, getting up and down off of the ground is the fountain of youth. Well, I think it is actually a really big deal, because it does, it's a shotgun that covers a lot. It's not just like, there's certain other ones like the, I'll come back to it, but there's also research around cardiology as well, of grip strength being directly associated to heart disease. Mm-hmm. And so that's like, people will hack that and be like, cool, I'm going to get a grip strengthener and just like squeeze my fingers. And like, that'll strengthen my heart. It's like, kind of, I mean, you're circulating blood and that's cool. But your grip strength is an indicator that you do shit with your body.
Right.
Totally.
You know, so you do manual labor and you climb and you hang and you pull and maybe you climb a ladder every now and again and you pick up your kids and you're like, you're inhabiting yourself. Mm-hmm. That heart will be a healthy heart. Just if you're just the standard, you know, sad diet and sitting in a chair staring at your phone and watching TV and doing your grip strength, it has nothing to do with that.
Totally.
Yeah.
So it's a similar thing with the sit-stands test.
Yeah, my benchmark is, I always tell people that they should be able to hang from a bar with one hand.
Great.
To support their body weight.
Yeah, you know,
that's just the bare minimum, in my opinion.
Very few people can do that.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, get...
I don't know if I can do that.
Go
I'd
into,
have to check that.
go into... I mean, just as far as, like, if you get outside of, like, where we live, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've been surprised by just the lack of integrity, of grip strength and shoulders and all that stuff. But... the potential, I agree with you as far as bare minimum. Mm-hmm. It's just for most people, it's going to take, there's going to be a process to get to that point. And I think for sure, like, that should be a benchmark for any person that like gives a dang about their body. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I should be able to, like, I could do that. Like, no problem. When I had no muscles on my body at all, you know, and I was age, you know, 1 through 10. Mm-hmm. And then somehow I got stronger and like more awesome. But I can't do all these things that I could do when I didn't know anything and I had no muscles. Mm-hmm. What's the disconnect here?
Totally. No, I think it's because, you know, you can be a power lifter and deadlift 500 pounds, but if you got the pot belly and you can't hold yourself from a bar, then you may have amazing grip strength, but
yeah.
Relative to your body weight, it could be a huge indicator that there's some imbalance going on there. Yeah. I know that it's probably, you know, there's no study in terms of grip strength towards relative to body weight that I know of. So, you know, I'm just saying that just personally, that's what
no,
I
shoot agree.
For.
I agree with what you're saying. I just think that for a lot of people, if we were to look at averages, mm-hmm. and again, like look at like the standard statistical American or Westerner, mm-hmm. I think for the most part, it's like, I'm so optimistic about like everything, and I really truly do see just so much potential in like every human being I've ever connected with. Mm-hmm. And the state that for the most part, like average is, I think there's like a lot of room for improvement.
So absolutely. I have a question for like our office goers, because maybe sitting on the floor is not such an option for the office. What do you think of like the standing desk or any of the like walking desks? Like, are those a good option, or should they just sit when they get home on the floor?
So like, I've heard other people say like your best move is your next move, you know, so like whatever you're doing, just make sure that it's, you're kind of maintaining consistency in changing, you know, so I think walking treadmill desks are creepy and awesome. You know, like that's like, wow, that's fucking weird, but like, cool, that's great. Standing desks, also, you know, great. Less creepy, great. And they, but within that, make sure that you are made to your best move is your next move. So make sure that you have maybe like you could bring like a, you know, a stool or even like a rock, you know, to be able to bring your foot up and take your spine out of that chronic extension. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're going alternating back and forth, essentially like marching and I bounce on here. Maybe now I've exercised in the book about this. Stand up on one foot and drive that standing foot down into the ground. So you're elongating that standing side. So you're feeling that the lower hip, the ilium, drop down. So you're opening up through those ribs and the intercostals and you know all the muscles inside of the body. And then you can drive down the other side. You know, and now you're practicing balance. Now maybe you can take a break. One, ideally have your computer or whatever you're working on near a window so you can go through like eye yoga, essentially. Take your eyes through a full range of motion. There's a whole chapter about that. We can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but now maybe you could say like, oh, I'm going to like practice balance a little bit. Maybe I'll close my eyes for 10 seconds. You know, you start doing that. Now it's like, yeah, one, you closed your eyes, which gave yourself a break from doing the work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, you start introspecting and feeling into yourself almost like a prayer of sorts or like a little mindfulness moment. And you're starting to work on your equilibrium and all this. Like now you go in, you walk out of that office environment. You're like, I'm a fucking athlete. You know, fine. Like I've been athleting all day, dog.
That's funny. That's good. I never thought about it like that. Do you still use your standing desk that I got you for Christmas, Chris?
Not as much as I should. I know for a fact, but I
I know for a fact.
I know.
Like, I know. I'll admit right now. You out right now that you don't use it enough.
Yeah, that was a rhetorical question. But I did know that one thing that I noticed when I do use it pretty frequently is that I have to keep myself from leaning into one leg. I have a tendency to, like, you know, when you bend one leg and you kind of lean into one hip and you straighten that one, you kind of put all of your weight on one side.
Yep.
And I know that can create some lower back problems and things like that. I also have an anterior pelvic tilt, so there's that problem. So
no, it's not a problem.
It just creates some issues when I'm standing for a long time and things like that.
Too much spine extension.
Right.
Yeah, so raising that foot up will be a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
also getting like a stool. So we should set a stool
super
next
simple.
To your
oh,
desk.
Absolutely.
That's it.
So just certain small little things like that. And, you know, but yeah, I actually found that out just with trial and error, just having to be like, okay, well, maybe if I just put this foot up on my, because I used to have this toolbox that I keep my office supplies in. So I put it up on that. And so just small little things like that. But yeah, it's really tough because when you're working, you're concentrated on your work. And so your mindfulness about your posture and keeping everything in line it just kind of drifts away. And so I almost like, you know,
but
when I was working at
a desk. That's
a
belief system though.
Totally.
That's a story.
Absolutely. But I, you know, and because I had the tendency to do that, I started setting alarms on my phone, like every hour would be an alarm, a reminder, and it just says posture. And
cool.
I just go like this.
I know, I was thinking about that.
And I straighten up, and I always, you know, I have all these indicators and things like that, because I also have a wing scapula, so there's other things that I'm trying to correct as well, you know. So those, I just found myself that every time that alarm would go off, I would go like this. And then 5 minutes later, I'd have to recorrect it because I'm back to work and I'm not thinking about it. And slowly the shoulders start creeping forward. And, you know, so it is literally like when we say mindfulness, you know, the posture correction, especially if you're trying to correct an imbalance or a weakness or something like that, it's a constant effort.
It's a constant effort. Yes. And it will be a far more arduous journey if you are fighting against the tidal wave of your lifestyle consistently pulling you back. And so if you can, luckily there's a Joseph Campbell quote, like, we're fishing for minnows while we're standing on a whale, you know. So the whale that I suggest is the way that you inhabit yourself on a momentary basis.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can look around your home and say, okay, cool, like, what, so my home is a space of self-development and construction. You know, as I'm in here, there's another Einstein quote, says that the particle is contained and regulated by the field. You know, so we're all a couple particles, nanoparticle and crisp particle and air particle, and we're being affected, regulated by our environment. So right now our environment's on the ground. So I'm in a deep Malasana squat right now. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't know it, but like I'm actually like all the way in this thing right now. And now Amanda's in like a Sukhasana type thing. And then you're in kind of like a Malasana, but your butt's down on the pillow,
just adjusted,
which is a little more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And you just adjusted. Mm-hmm. So after this, we're being contained and regulated by this place. We essentially like, we did a conversation, yes, but we literally just did it like a yoga class. Like, this is what you would do at a yoga class. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you can start to say like, okay, cool. Like, what is my, what's my home look like? Like right now, people listening, like look around, you know, say, cool. I have a dinner table with a bunch of chairs around it. Then I have a TV on, you know, on the wall. And then I have, you know, a couch. And then I have, you know, there's not a lot of like space to move around. So I'm probably not going to open my body up at any point in this room just because I literally physically can't. You know, so what's my body going to do? Okay. It's going to start to kind of shrink in a little bit. You know, so you can look around your room and say like, how do I open this thing up a little bit? Like I want to starfish, mm-hmm. you know, I want to open up my diaphragm and switch to the side and roll around. And like, oh man, like my, you know, my girlfriend, like sometimes we will like wrestle, you know, like she's starting jujitsu and she'll like try to kick my ass. You know, like, well, I can't, she can't kick my ass in this room because it's too tight. I'll bang against this hard side of the, you know, whatever, the table. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what if we just get rid of that stupid table? You know, what if we kind of like, okay, this couch is great, but like it's pretty darn big. You know, maybe we could make, adjust some form, whatever it is, new floor cushion, whatever it may be. Now, just your mere existence in that place becomes, you become contained and regulated by it. It's like, wow, all of a sudden, just by me being, I become a more mobile, flexible, strong, confident person. Compared to, you know, most of the fields that people are occupying, it's more of one of like, okay, cool, the shoulders roll forward and the head goes forward and mm-hmm. I stay kind of tight and closed off. And then I wonder why I don't feel strong and confident in conversation and out in public. I kind of want to like hide. So, well, you perhaps there could be a correlation of mechanically you've been practicing like this anatomical position of kind of going in.
Well, there's obviously the mental benefits of having good posture as well. Yeah. You know, you were talking about neurotransmitters earlier, but your posture actually has huge implications on or effects on, you know, like serotonin and dopamine mm-hmm. production. You know, for instance, like you were talking about, you know, feeling confident. Like there's been studies that talk about having an open, expressive posture versus a constricted posture and, you know, things like an increased production of serotonin, you have less cortisol, more testosterone, things like that. So can you maybe talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so a lot of the research around that is contentious.
Oh, really?
So I got this with, so there's one particular with Amy Cuddy is like a really popular one that I mentioned in there. And then I was like about to publish the book and I didn't realize there was counter research kind of refuting her stuff with the mm-hmm. testosterone. And she's from Harvard. She has really popular TED Talk, the second most popular ever as of now. And it's all about the way that you stand, you know, she calls it like the superwoman pose. You know, when you go into that superwoman mm-hmm. pose and shoulders back, I'm like, well, I'm strong and confident and yeah. love myself and all that. They'd take saliva samples and just after 2 minutes, they would find testosterone levels would increase and cortisol mm-hmm. would decrease. Cortisol is a common stress hormone. Mm-hmm. And then the inverse would happen when they go into, so that would be like the mopey position that I describe in the book.
Yeah.
The inverse would happen when they go into the aligned position that I describe in the book. Then, you know, cortisol goes down, testosterone goes up and they feel more confident and hormonally, physiologically, they actually, you know, appear to be more confident as well. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of not the easiest to replicate apparently, but now she has research refuting the refute. And, you know, the thing that you consistently do see is people feel different when they assume different positions. Mm-hmm. And even there's another study that I have in the book about, acquisition of memories. So when you go into more of that, like mopey kind of type position, you literally, people will, so it says San Francisco State University, they did a study with a bunch of students, they will feel more, or they'll access more like depressive type memories. And then the inverse happens, they go into happy memories when they're upright. Why? Probably because you anchor yourself to different states of mind based off of environmental cues, based off of postural cues, based off of auditory cues. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you hear a song that hypes you up before you go to the gym or whatever, it changes your state. Just be like, fuck yeah, here we go. Yeah. You know, like get your American flag bandana on and cut your sleeves off. And you're that like, would, here we go.
That would be red man for Chris.
Right, exactly. Totally. Yeah. You know, and so we're continually anchoring ourselves to these various different states based off of all these cues. Your posture is a huge cue. Mm-hmm. So throughout your life, always, you know, unless you're maybe like a psychopath or something, then there's probably a whole nother type of conversation around it. When you feel a way, you move away. Mm-hmm. And so now you've anchored those postural patterns to those states, so you can kind of hack your emotional, mental, and hormonal state based off of just kind of bringing yourself into those patterns. And you can make it actually, if you change, that's cool as a temporary fix. But there's all sorts of issues with why just pulling your shoulders back isn't really the end of the conversation. But what kind of is the end of the conversation is, what if I change the mold that I exist in? Mm-hmm. Now we're like really talking. Now we're like speaking to the whale, as opposed to like continuing to try to get these minnows and feel good for 2 hours or 2 days. Mm-hmm. But as long as you are in a mold, like if there's a fish in a bowl and the bowl is toxic, it doesn't matter what on it, supplements or whatever, you know, I gave him the green juice and this and that. It's like, no, like the mold that the fish is in is sick. Mm-hmm. You know, so if we start to look at the mold, I think that's like a really big deal.
Like the environment.
Environmental mold. Yeah.
Well, I also like the idea of setting up your environment for you to succeed, that it makes it difficult for you to fail. I mean, same thing with nutrition.
That's obviously what you do.
You get rid of all the junk food. And then like, yeah, with posture and all of that, or just like, we have the pull-up bar out and ready to go. So like super easy to do a dead hang. You know, Chris did, what did you tape to the ground? I forget.
Ladder.
The ladder to the ground.
Yeah, the agility ladder.
I mean, and I'll find myself, it's not really, it's more Chris's thing, but I'll still randomly, I'll still do it though, just because it's there. Just because it's there.
Sometimes I hear the pitter-patter in the hallway. I'm like, what's going on over there?
Yeah, it's really more his thing, but it's just because it's there. I'm like, well, I should do that.
Yeah.
Or we have a rebounder too. I do the rebounder 5 minutes in the morning.
That's
but
great.
Super mm-hmm. easy. So yeah, like setting up your environment, clearing up the room, like just get the pull-up bar and you'll just be like, I should use this.
Yeah, and you'll at least have enough shame and guilt that it will, cause you to do more than you would without it.
That's what I even say. Like, I'm like, oh, get the meal prep containers, get the mason jars. Like you'll have the stack of glass meal prep containers in the corner staring you in the face.
Yeah, you like, literally, that's exactly what you do. Yeah. Like you're literally doing the exact thing. You're teaching people how to do this align method movement stuff for nutrition.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you open up your cabinet and you're like, one, you're sending a feedback. Because I kind of have, I think, similar like type A tendencies. I'm very, I don't know what your tendencies are exactly, but I'm very like, you know, this shelf, if this was not at a 90-degree angle, it would kind of jack me up. You know, so I'm like, okay, cool, like a perfect geometry here. And okay, this pen is maybe in line with that. And like, okay. You know, so if I open up that cabinet and I have that organization, it's kind of this like, okay, life is in order. You know, and when you see your food, like if you have crappy, artificial, hydrogenated, fructose, all the things, and you open your cabinet, you're like, oh, okay, cool, there it is. One, like, duh, obviously, there's going to be options. But two, it sends a feedback of who you are. And so every time you open your cabinet, you say, this is who I am. Every time you walk into your house, you say, this is who I am. And so you start to look at that like, who the fuck am I? You like go into your house like, I think I'm this person, but my actions are not the thing that I, you know, write on my manifestation journal and what I post on my Instagram posts. Like if you actually look at the choices that I make, there's an incongruence there. Mm-hmm. And as long as there's an incongruence there, there's going to be friction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I got tons of friction.
Oh my god! Oh my goodness. So what are some other? You're cracking me up. So what are some other like big takeaways from your book that we haven't covered yet? Or
I think the thing that would be interesting. So it's broken down like 5 movement principles, which is like what the publishers demand. It's like definitely more than 5 movement principles, but it is broken down in like a really simplistic way in that way. But the last part that I'm probably like the most excited about, at least was most excited about writing. And by the way, it was co-written with, I had a fellow called Phil White, who's like a tremendous writer. He's written with like Kelly Starrett. Kelly Starrett did the Ford, Pavel Satsoulin, and Leonard Hamilton. He's done like all sorts of amazing things. So he helped with like research and also like it was like an amazing team dynamic on it. But the last section is called Moving Your Senses.
Okay.
And so it's getting into what I see as like a foundation of our wellness and our fitness that we don't really pay attention to is like the way that we use our eyes and the way that sounds affect us and, you know, the value of touch in our day to day. And yes. Mindfulness is one of those chapters.
Yep.
You know, so looking at fitness beyond the lens of just like how I do deadlifts and pull ups and muscle ups and getting into like, wow, just me as I'm sitting here, I can fitness myself by looking out the window. You know, and we already mentioned like exposing your eyes to sun and all that. But as I go into a panoramic vision, I exercise those muscles. That's actually more of like a relaxation of those muscles. Can we look at things close? In order to, for us to be able to perceive that image, we need to refract the light. We need to bend it. In order to do that, we need to contract these muscles called the ciliary muscles in our eyes. So they're literally, when you're looking at things close, you're literally contracting those eye muscles around the lens. So it's literally a state of contraction looking at your phone. When you look out into the panorama and you take in the trees or the ocean or whatever, or just allow your eyes to just glaze over when you're in a room, you're literally, those muscles are, they're relaxing, which sends a signal through your nervous system that, okay, we're chilling. All right, cool. All right, it's time to chill. You know, so if you're a person that's like adrenal fatigue or brain fog or, you know, just like really tired but still has issues sleeping, you know, so your nervous system's kind of chronically on go and your evening tradition is to, you know, answer the rest of your Instagram notifications or finish out your emails or whatever, something that it would be very wise for you to explore is how you're using your eyes throughout the day. I love that right now as we're doing this, Amanda's like looking out the window and doing the whole thing. I'm like, yeah, man, enough. Get it.
My eyes hurt. I mean, I really have never thought about, I mean, you've mentioned it to me before, Chris, mm-hmm. where you've said
looking into the distance.
But now I should like reconsider that because that's like, I'm being on my computer
as a game
hours.
Changer. It's huge.
Yeah, I forgot who it was. It was a Joe Rogan podcast, but this woman was talking about like needing to look into the horizon a few times a day, at least a few times a day. She was all about natural movement. She like never had a baby stroller, was always carrying her baby.
Katie Bowman.
Really?
I was just talking with her today.
And sleeps on the floor, you know, like doesn't sleep with a pillow because she was like the idea of our head being propped up isn't good for our neck posture, things like that. I mean, she's hardcore. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's very hardcore.
I'm like the millennial Santa Monica way less hardcore
version
of that. Yeah. I'm like, everything's fine. Just pay attention.
Now, how can this fix my weak eye though? That's the real question.
Yeah.
She had to like block out one eye for a portion of her childhood. Yeah. To like strengthen the weak one. Yeah.
Wow.
If you look closely, my eyes are like different shapes.
So that's an interesting thing. Like, but you're literally by doing that, that's because by blocking out that one side, you're mm-hmm. forced to use that eye, which will strengthen it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's essentially proving the whole idea that we're talking about. Like, oh, so if I use my eye differently, it changes. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's like working it out. You know?
That's right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So switching gears, why don't we talk about some like actions and some tips that people can do to on like some actual things to put this into play, to put it into practice that people can do every day, just one thing a day, a couple things a day to start this going.
Well, so one thing that I would recommend would be, so we're talking about like, cause I have my condolences go out to people who was like, this stuff is great. But I will be fired if I start doing a malasana squat like midway while I'm like in my cubicle.
Yes. Yeah,
so like it's not accepted.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well perhaps that could be reason to start like seeing what's my 2-year plan with this, you know, and like, where am I going with my life? Cause my biology is kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And like feeling free and you know, all that stuff in my body is pretty important. But today it's just, I just can't do that. I got bills. I have children. It's not possible today. Mm-hmm. Something that I would recommend is obviously paying attention to the mechanics of the way that you're sitting and doing all those things, but set a, you call it like a Pomodoro timer is a thing where it's mm-hmm. like you're doing concentrated work sessions for 25 minutes and then giving yourself a 5-minute break to go take a walk, ideally go outside. If you can't go outside because it's just not an option for you, get near windows, you know, and get sun on your skin. If you can, open those windows so you're getting that full spectrum of light, because windows will block out a different percentage of spectrum depending upon the window. Put yourself around, so that would be one thing. Then come back, do your 25 minutes, concentrate. It's also, you will reach a point that you kind of start to max out with like your workload and your capacity to learn. And so having that concentrated 25 minute time frame, you can be really focused, be really productive, and then take a break and kind of off gas and consolidate and come back and actually be productive, as opposed to having like 9 hours of just like grudging through your day and doing what you literally could have done in probably 4 hours, but you were already maxed out, you know, 6 hours ago.
Totally.
So that would be one thing. Do you want me to keep going?
Absolutely.
There was one that I really liked for relieving stress was the box breathing, I think you called
it.
If you could walk us through that. That's one that I want to implement. And you guys, you definitely have to get his book because he has this all written out. He has some pictures to support it where you can check out some videos too. But anyways, let's get into this breathing method.
Yeah, we can just do it. You know, so you're just going, so I do a, I break down box breathing, which is four breaths with 4 seconds. So 4 seconds in, 4 second hold, 4 second out, and then 4 second hold. And then you do that again. I recommend people emphasize the breath out, which goes into, if you want to calm down, if that's your goal. So when we're breathing out, we're going a little bit more into that like parasympathetic side of the nervous system, rest, digest, heal, all that stuff. So what I recommend is, first of all, just paying attention to the breath is a big step. Secondly, as you're doing this, you can add a little tactile feedback. So you can actually put your hands on the sides of your ribs, putting them down low. So you're kind of wrapping like essentially around the diaphragm. So like that, those low ribs, that diaphragm wraps all the way around. It's like a big plunger, goes all the way around your back, connects to your psoas, all that. And as you're breathing, the mechanics of that, make sure that you're in that aligned upright position that we were referring to before. Hips are above the knees, so that makes it easier on you, setting yourself up for success. And then from there, breathing outwardly, so horizontally, as opposed to like vertically, like up into your neck, and feel those ribs expanding out to the side. And good. And then you can do another one, bring your hands actually behind your back on your lumbar spine, and then breathe in and feel a subtle traction of your lower back. So you're literally, and then all the way out. So you're literally, every breath you're taking, it's like you're decompressing your spine. Now you can choose, maybe you want your ribs on your side, maybe you put on your navel and your back, whatever feels good for you. You can move them around if you choose. And then you're going to breathe in for 4 seconds. So we're going to breathe in. Then hold that for 4 seconds. And then out for 6 seconds. Then hold that for 4 seconds. And then take a normal breath in. And you could do that, you know, I recommend, I think in the book, I recommend like six cycles, whatever you have time for.
Yeah.
You could do one cycle.
I know, one is life-changing.
One's life-changing, yeah. It's crazy, man. Like the stuff that we have access to, and by we, I mean like me. Like I, like I said, I am a student of this book. Yeah. Like these are things that I forget all the time. You know, and so all these, and whenever I, you know, I'll lead workshops and such, and, you know, any type of like speaking gig or whatever, I'm essentially going to have people do some variety of this at some point. And I'm like always surprised. Like every, I'm like, whoa, that shit works. Like this room changed. Like that was like literally took us 55 seconds. And every person all of a sudden, they're just like, oh. They like disarm and they start looking at each other in the eyes and they're like, whoa, it's crazy.
No, that felt really good. I mean, if you ever attend a party with Aaron and he's leading it, you're going to end up bouncing around. Like he has everyone bouncing around, like shaking it out.
Move the people.
But yeah, I love it. Well, there are so many more, like examples of things you can implement in your life in the book.
I know. Well, there's one that I personally do in my car and when I'm sitting at my desk that I really like, and that's putting a plastic bottle in between my shoulder blades, kind of like in your thoracic spine.
Yeah, that's great.
And it just helps your your chest spread, because there's a lot of the way that chairs are designed, they go in the middle.
To yeah, like the bucket seat.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to think they were great. I mean, like Subaru WRX, you get in, you're like, wow, you're like really in here. But posturally, if you look at that body, you're like, oh, you're like the sad crab.
Yeah, they actually force your shoulders forward, you know? So you're actually fighting the shape of the chair to sit in a proper posture.
Yeah.
But if you put that right on your spine, it allows your shoulder blades to, you know, squeeze together. You can roll your shoulders out, spread your chest a little bit.
Yep.
You know, so it's crucial. I like, that's one of my favorite tips. You said it on Instagram, and I've done it ever since, about
cool.
a year ago.
I love that, man. Yeah, simple stuff like that. So that's the crossover or analogy for more of like what you guys more regularly promote from like a nutritional perspective. That would be like, cool, I'm going to go to a restaurant because I don't want to be a weirdo that only eats at my house alone, which I'm kind of that way many times. But I'm going to go to the restaurant, you know, but maybe I'm going to bring my own little canister of like really high quality salt, or I'm going to bring my own little dripper of olive oil because all they have is like soybean or canola bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, cool, I'm at the restaurant, you know, but I'm going to consciously choose what I purchase. And I know there's a few things that they just don't have that are kind of non-negotiables for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to quietly bring them, you know? Yeah. And so it's like, okay, cool. I don't need to make a fuss about it. I don't need to like judge anybody about the way that they put whatever oil in their salad. So with your chair, you don't need to like call the airplane company and, you know, file a lawsuit because the seats are making you sad.
Yeah.
You can literally just bring your water bottle, you know, whatever sort, you know, I recommend getting like one that's like a, you know, reusable, whatever thing, you know, and throw that thing back around like thoracic spine territory.
Mm-hmm.
To literally what you're doing is you're just taking that cave, that concavity out of the seat.
Mm-hmm.
So now the seat becomes a little bit more upright. And now you can literally start using that space. If it's too big of a bottle, it'll be kind of weird. But feel what feels comfortable for you. You know, and now you can use that contact that you have with the bottle or the pillow or the jacket or whatever the heck it is, a small child. And you can breathe into the small child. So every time you take a breath, you're pushing
your poodle.
Your poodle, whatever. You can breathe into it. You know, and so, yeah, whatever you want to throw, but it really doesn't matter. It's just, you're literally just going in and you're reshaping the seat subtly without making a big fuss about it.
Yeah. And since you were tying a little of this into the nutrition aspect, one thing I wanted to go back to when he was talking about, you know, the diaphragmatic breathing, the lymphatic movement, getting that movement through the system, how that affects digestion. Well, you also have a better digestive response, because they do call the parasympathetic nervous system the rest and digest state, and there's a reason for that. So you have a better digestion, which means better absorption, which means that if you have, you know, whether it's a muscle gain or fat loss goal, then that's going to be achieved better if you're constantly relaxed and then in that state, and as opposed to in heightened cortisol and that shallow breath kind of thing. It's not just a physical aspect. There's so many facets that are touched by this.
All the spokes are tied to this hub. And all of the spokes are integral, you know? And so there's like all sorts of interesting research. Like it's not about what you eat. It's about what you're able to actually assimilate, you know, and what is your microbiome, what's the quality of that bacteria inside of you, and how do they end up assimilating that nutrition that you're taking, you know? And so there's interesting research. This is kind of like jumping into other spokes. But your quality of your state of mind is associated to the bacteria that you have inside of you.
Totally.
So is that chicken or the egg? Like, it's a big conversation. You know, it's one that I like really love having with people on my own platforms. Just feeling like what's first, chicken or the egg? You know, and so I have these world renowned experts on. They're always like, I don't really know. You know, I think it's kind of both. You know, and so you can affect your biome. And everything through affecting your filter that you perceive the world through. You can affect the filter you perceive the world through your mechanical positions. You can affect your mechanical positions through dietary choices, because it affects the way that you feel. You know, so it doesn't matter where you get on the train. It just matters that you get on. You know, and getting on is just essentially beginning the process of paying attention.
Totally.
Absolutely. Well, I really enjoyed today's podcast. If there was one area you'd say for listeners to master first, because I know we're getting on the train, but where
get on the train.
Get on the train. But where should they start?
I think, I usually, with this type of question, I usually go some kind of like meta direction. And I think just practicing compassion is probably what I think is like a really big deal. Because you can do, you can have all of your micros and macros and have like the perfect, you know, nutritional thing, and you have your perfect fitness sorted out, and you got your Fitbit or your Aura ring, or you got your quantified self, and you're like, dude, I am just this perfect expression of a robot or person, you know. And then, but within that, if you have, you haven't forgiven yourself for something, and every time you walk into the room, there's like, fuck, man, like I am just, I'm a piece of shit, you know, or you haven't forgiven this person, or you haven't, you know, whatever. It's like, if you're holding on to some degree of contraction inside of yourself, emotionally, then that will express itself through the body, and it will express itself through your life, and it'll express itself through your filter that you perceive things through. And then you will recreate that. And as long as that's happening, it does not matter what the hell protein supplement you choose. If you're coming from an inflamed emotional state, it's going to be a really like a tough go. And again, just get on the train anywhere, because you can augment what you're eating to start to affect your thoughts, I think, as well.
Yep. Wow. I was not expecting you to say that.
Yeah.
But
I wasn't
love
expecting
that.
Compassion out of it.
I was like somewhere.
Which is great.
No, but I really love
that. Which shows that this is a multifaceted approach. Obviously there's five movement principles in the book, but it's not just limited to five. It's just so universal.
Well, I think if you talk to anybody, you guys included, that's been in any industry for long enough, you know, so I've been professionally working with clients for 16 years. In that time frame, I've been obsessive over the mechanics, and I've been obsessive over like anything that's Western scientifically approved, measurable in a beaker, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you get to a point where eventually you're like, I think it's just behind all of that, it's like, what's people's purpose? You know, like, do you have this sensation of like a joie de vivre in your life? You know, do you feel loved? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're a person that's on purpose? And if you do, I think all those other components start to come online. And again, those components can feed back into that. It's not just go straight to like talk therapy, purpose on life, and all of a sudden, you know, everything else does. It's mm-hmm. go from any angle. But to me, that conversation just gets richer and richer.
Oh, that's so dope. I mean, I seriously was like, that was so out of left field, but it's it almost should have been another aspect of the podcast, like not just a final wrap up thought. But I mean,
that's
it was
started,
but
I
mean, I think it's really important, and it's one of the most important aspects and messages you said in the entire podcast.
Oh,
you know,
good.
I love it. Yeah,
cool. Absolutely.
Because maybe it's just because it's something that I need to focus on. So that's
me
just,
too. Again, the only reason that I'm saying anything is because I'm like, oh, this is what I need to be working on. If it wasn't something that I needed to be working on, I wouldn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. You're not just preaching from the pedestal?
No. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Not
no,
even
I know.
Close.
I know.
Aaron,
it's a rhetorical
Aaron's
question.
The real deal.
No, I don't. I know it.
I'm suspicious of myself. Seriously. Every time I look back like 5 years ago and I'm like, I think I knew, you know, I think I know what's going on. I look back, I'm like, oh, I had no idea. So if history is correct based off of, you know, what I've observed with myself, I would imagine looking back, I'll be like, oh yeah, there's still a lot of work.
Well, there you have it.
So where can everyone get your book, get connected with you? What are all your platforms? How do we reach you?
The book. So the book is anywhere. So it's called The Align Method.
Okay.
And I mean, the essentially this conversation really did encapsulate the book well. Mm-hmm. That's anywhere books are sold. And then I host a podcast called The Align Podcast. And conversations like this are very regular. And yeah, everything's Align Podcast. If you just type that in the internet, you'll stumble across the Instagrams and all that stuff.
You'll see him with a big old smile on his face.
I will probably have a big old smile on my face. Yeah, because it changes the way it should feel.
Absolutely. There it is. All right, guys. Well, check out the show notes for the podcast. And we're excited to hear what you think. And we'll see you on the next one.
Catch you later. Bye.
All right. See you. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you, man.